Okay, so Edward is one of the best teachers in general that I know, teachers of basketball specifically, and really basketball minds that I know. I learn from all the time. He and I ran point guard college PGC sessions together for years and years and years. He's got his own business called Court Sessions, where he does clinics, consulting, and player development. And so we're thrilled to have him on. You can always reach out to him at edward@courtsessions.com. Let's get into it. Edward, what's wrong with coaches?
I think if we start with that they think they're coaches and not teachers. And then also, how do you view your role? Not only as a coach versus teacher, but what do you seek out? So many coaches think their problem is they're missing something in their offense, they're missing something in their defense. And then because of that, they seek out a fix their offense or defense, like a play or a system. How much time do you spend on player development versus team things? Like those two things are exclusive at all. It's like asking what days of the week do you eat healthy? I mean, it doesn't even make sense, but yet we've allowed it to make sense because everyone says the same thing. So no one's the outlier to do it. So I think those are two big ones for me. Just first of all, their approach to who they think they really are, because that drives behavior. And then like their expectations, that also drives behavior. Like they actually expect, because they told a kid to do something that in theory works, that they don't do it, then that kid's not good enough. Kids aren't supposed to be good at basketball when they can't do something. We understand they don't know it. We understand they have to learn it, teach it, mess up through it. We don't teach them things and then give them a test, but yet we'll put in a play right before a game or even during a game. I think just expectations and then approach drives behavior, and then that drives reaction. And the next thing you know, we got a sport losing kids at record numbers. And I think we're as illiterate as we've ever been as a basketball community, from all the way from coaches to players. And here we are.
Let me give an example of me being a coach. This is negative, okay? Just to be clear, this is a negative example. Recently, I was coaching my daughter's fourth and fifth grade club select team. And my friend, who is a Kyle Kazuda, who was a Division I basketball player and great teacher and clinician of the game of basketball for many, many years, he was watching because he's friends with my daughter. And afterwards, he went in on me. He's like, "Tyler, I have never seen someone get so upset when a fifth grader didn't peek." Peek is a term that we use that, like, the moment you get possession of the basketball before you do something else, you gain vision by peeking up the court at your rim, right? He's like, "Tyler, you were losing your mind that these fourth and fifth grade girls weren't peeking." He's like, "What expectation did you have for them to peek?" "Because I've taught them to peek for 2 months, Kyle." I was a coach. That was a coach, right? I had an expectation of a skill that they should have in order for us to be successful, win the game, and for them to develop, blah, 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 blah. That's a coach. A teacher would not have gotten upset. A teacher would have recognized, all right, they don't yet have this skill. It needs to be taught more. And it's not upsetting, it's just data. That's the difference. I was a coach in that moment. And that is, like, I think the simplest, most, like, just pure and transparent definition of the difference between coaching and teaching. And I see it everywhere because we have a wrong-headed image of what it means to be a coach, right? My other daughter just started playing volleyball for her middle school team. It is terrible. I mean, if you can serve it over the net, your team's winning the point. Okay. And this volleyball coach, bless her heart, she's out there doing it, right? Was like getting frustrated and in the moment joysticking these girls that can't even serve the ball over the net, about like all these things, like, because that's what she thinks, that's what culture thinks a coach should do. A coach is supposed to set an expectation for performance. When they don't get performance, coach gets upset because I told you to do it this way, right? Whereas a teacher gets fascinated and excited about the opportunities to teach. Mistakes are the opportunity. So that's the biggest difference. So the biggest problem with coaching is coaches and the view that we have of coaches.
Yeah, and coaches do nothing to change that. And you know, Tyler, you know, very vulnerable there talking about what he did, but that is asymptomatic of a coach versus a teacher. Is they're prisoners of the moment, like Tyler was. Like Tyler in that moment had a relapse, right, to who he was, to who I used to be, who I have relapses all the time. Of this moment is really important for this fourth and fifth grader.
Yeah.
Versus the teacher, the leader having vision to go, I have to have this moment with this fifth grader so that as a junior in high school, she's doing it all the time. Yeah. And if I keep reacting to these moments, I'm almost guaranteeing if she does continue, by the way, she'll never get stacking habits and growing, because if everything counts like that in terms of results, then nothing does. Yeah. And we just don't have the vision for that, as we don't have the confidence in that, because I think deep down, this is not getting the psychology of this, but I think also coaches need it to be right because they can't wait on the next rep, because then we know we haven't taught it. It's like flipping a coin. Like, it got to be heads. We haven't done the work. And then the arrogance that comes with coaches, sorry here, but like coaches, one of the biggest issues I deal with, I'll wait for Tyler to either say yes or no, and I'd love for him to actually say yes or no, this is, when we go workplaces, when we consult over the phone, in person, whatever, one of the biggest things I and my staff have to figure out is how do we tiptoe around the ego of a coach that hasn't put in the work, doesn't have the relationship or buy-in, is still doing the same stale things, blaming the people who fill the jerseys. And then we got to figure out how do we deliver honesty and truth to make a change while not offending you for the thing you should be offended for. Like, yes. And then you want to blame the kid.
Yeah. Let me say yes and give a compliment. And the compliment I want to deliver is to all of the coaches that are in year two and three with Savvy Basketball. We have over 500 coaches in our membership, and the vast majority of them, 350 plus, have been with us 2 to 3 years. They are different. And yet every coach that we start working with, yes, that's you're tiptoeing around the ego. But the coaches that stick around, and not everybody sticks around with us at Savvy Basketball, but the coaches that stick around have killed their ego in order to serve their program. And that's really what it takes. You have to kill your ego. And I think a lot of the ego comes from like the vision of what we see as a coach at the highest levels, what we're seeing on TV, you know, what we're seeing in the NCAA tournament or the professional level, we're seeing this picture of a coach that we're attempting to emulate. But that actually is a coach. It's not a teacher. And across the broad spectrum of athletic performance, where you can get away with coaching, and again, using coaching as we defined it, where you can get away with coaching the most is at the top 1%. That's where you can get away with coaching the most, where you have the most well-educated, high-performing athletes with super high IQ. That's where you can coach, because there's the least amount to teach. That's where you can coach. So we see that. And then we're at our levels where coaching actually doesn't matter at all. We must teach and we try to coach. That's the problem. And we think that a coach has to look like that. That's what a respectful coach looks at. If my team's performing badly, I have to show everyone that it's not my fault. I've told them what to do, right? I just told you to do that, Isaac, right? It's Isaac's fault. It's not my fault, because you care about your identity and your status as a coach. And that's where coaches get it wrong.
100%. And then, you know, also like the highest level, to your point, also does them a disservice in trying to emulate that, because they see the end result to where those guys are playing for, you know, wins and losses and are focusing on results because it's about livelihood. But they also have done tons of teaching. They also have guys in the staff that are working on those things. They also have, you know, they haven't skipped steps to just get to like, you have to do so much work. Like, coaching is a privilege that you earn by teaching. And if you haven't taught something to where the person you taught it to could then teach it to someone else, then you don't deserve to coach them. I mean, I had kids in my gym this morning, and I intentionally put some new kids with some older kids, and the older kids went and the younger kids watched and kind of started work on like using their voice more and leading and learning. And then when the younger kids went, I said, I know you're here for me, but I'm actually not going to teach you this. They are. And my older group taught those skills that they're very habitual with now. And I'm like, hey, if you don't know it, then that's on me. But of course they knew it and they could get it going. But we just, it all makes sense, right? And I think also with this, coaches, is just this gross miscalculation of how hard basketball is. Mm-hmm. And it's simple, but it's still very difficult. And then we overcomplicate it with so many things that are distractions. Plays are distractions. Sets are distractions. I hate to say it, but most of these coaching clinics are distractions. They're just all this activity, and you're picking up all these things that make sense that no one can do. No one gives you the depth of. No one tells you how you arrived here. No one tells you why the thing I'm putting up on the board makes sense because of the 10 things I did that didn't make sense before it. Like, it's just all so lazy. And I feel like it's like every coach has this secret code that we've all agreed to mm-hmm. not teach, to blame the kids, to keep doing the stale things, to keep just this thing going. And as long as no one breaks the code, no one will know the secret that we're all in on it together. It's like this big scheme. Yeah. And, you know, guys like us come along and start a business that's successful. And then, you know, I know you get it. I get it. We get hate from coaches all the time. They control players. And they just teach them potential. We don't care if they're the best player in their team or if they sit the bench. We just empower them and teach them and let basketball be the teacher for their life while they pursue their potential in the game. That's all we do. That's not that difficult.
It's not that difficult, and it's the hardest step you'll take. Like, it's not that difficult to do.
Hardest step you'll take.
It's the hardest step that you'll take. Okay, let me. Can I back up for a second and talk about coaching clinics? Since we're talking about what's wrong with
Let me say one thing with that real quick before we move on a little bit. You mentioned your savvy coaches that all started in a version of what we're talking about, and now the difference when they stuck with it and got through like that first big barrier is the hardest part. Coaches, think about it like this. Whether you're a good coach or a bad coach or whatever, think about it like this. No matter how long you've been coaching, no matter what your resume says, think about it like this. When you walk into a gym, someone's having an open gym or a pickup game, can you spot the kid that's just different? They carry themselves different. They respond to mistakes different. They just take it. They just approach it different. They are different. You can spot those out, can't you, coaches? We all can. Well, that's what we're talking about with you guys. I can tell on a phone call with a coach how difficult it's going to be by just the way they respond to things, where their head goes first, what they think the problem is first, why they think the problem is the problem. Be that kid. Coaches, I'm challenging all of you to be that kid that when someone sees, like, oh, wait, that's just different. Like, they're approaching that different. They think of that different. They come off different. They care different. It's not that you would stand out immediately. And it's not about standing out to me or Tyler or people like us. It's standing out to your kids. Be that different teacher.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just scrolling right now through statements of these savvy coaches as they have come to these realizations. And like, really, they have like story after story. One, Coach Ryan Rush, shout out Ryan Rush. He's about 2.5 years in as a savvy coach. And 2 years into installing like our systems and becoming what we call a savvy coach, which is really this teacher coach that we're talking about. And he said, like, he just shared for the first time, all the middle school programs have installed the systems, embraced a games approach, really just focused in on player development, all this stuff, right? The savvy shooting system, which is a very non-traditional way to teach shooting. And they're just in year two. And they're 1 year removed. So like they're fifth, sixth, and seventh graders are 1 year in. They just played a team that they played 1 year ago and across the board lost to. And 1 year later after doing it, they just went and they just wiped this team that they lost to a year ago. And he said, after this happened, all these parents came up to him and said, we thought what you were doing over the past year was stupid, was crazy. We hated it. We asked for you to be fired. We're the ones that wrote those anonymous letters to the athletic director. Like, there's a coach in Iowa that's like, you know, big basketball tradition, all this stuff, right? And they're like, but after a year in, we're now convinced that this works. And thank you so much for putting up with us. But that's what every coach is dealing with. Like, you will deal with that if you try to do something different. Like you're saying, that one kid in the gym that's different, like, you will be the coach that is different. I'll give another just like a really strong analogy in my mind. When I was a college basketball player, I was transferring school, so I had to redshirt for a season. I was watching the women's coach of the new school that I was going to play for. I was sitting in the stands with my boys on the men's basketball team. I was watching the women's coach. And at that point, I thought, like, man, I did some training with some kids. I thought I knew my stuff. I was going to be a great coach. I was a point guard. I was super smart. I was watching the women's coach. And the women's coach was a savvy coach. Quiet, observant, one-on-one conversations, not joysticking, not overreacting. When a mistake was made on the court, applauding the mistake. And I can recall, like, I went so loud in insulting this coach and saying, what a bad coach. You don't clap when your player turns the ball over. You know, what? You're not even coaching your team. Look how quiet she is. She's not even coaching your team. I was that person, right? And she was that savvy coach.
Same here.
I didn't even recognize it till 15 years later. And I've actually since like reconnected with that coach and complimented her and applauded her. But like it, I didn't even know what I didn't know. And that's what most coaches, you don't know what you don't know. No parents don't know what they don't know, right? You will look different. And like the image we have of what a good coach is not what a great teacher is. And so you have to be willing to look different.
Like I would have handled that the same way you did. Like what? How? Why would you clap? Like no. Like I was because I knew so much, right? I was confident. I turned to be so good. My players and my coaches. I just speak to my players. My impact on my players immediately changed. It was immediate when I understood what a mistake was.
Mm-hmm.
Like I used to think a mistake was turning the ball over. Making a bad decision, shooting a bad shot, missing it, getting beat on defense, right? Because I was result oriented, but mm-hmm. I also hadn't taught them the process and the education of why to make a shot, when to make a shot, how to make a shot, what's the right read. So I'm coaching results when I haven't given them the education or the space to learn how to get the result. When I realized what is the fertile ground that grows good things, and I realized it came down to, can you be honest? Can you give energy relative to what we need? Can you be a good teammate to those in the gym? And can you be coachable? When I realized those four things were the only things that mattered, everything changed, because my players now know the only thing that gets him upset are those four things. Everything else is why he's here, right? He's here for every other mistake we got. Don't make those four. Yeah. And it's because of that, we talk about safe space. Mm-hmm. My kids don't have a safe space. They have like a rambunctious space. It's not safe. It's like wild space. They can be wild. They can do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. They can break an air ball as long as they're doing it right. And that whole courageous thing comes into like, hey, we taught you how to do this right. I don't mind that you're missing. I mind that you're missing because you're afraid to miss. I mind that you're missing still doing your old habit. That's my issue. So you're actually breaking one of our rules of not being courageous. So yeah, miss all you want, but miss this way. Turn over all you want, but turn over this way.
Yeah.
That changed my impact almost overnight. And I don't hide that from my players. I tell them the four things that I don't tolerate.
Yeah.
And they can have everything else.
Yeah. And I would, you know, just to frame that, and I am going to come back to coaching clinics. Those are your standards. Language that I would use. Those are your standards. Like you've got to know what your standards are. I'll give a really good example of standards. So we actually just started another community for coaches, non-basketball coaches, but all coaches around this. Like very little of what Edward, I'd say nearly no, nothing that Edward and I have talked about so far is specific to basketball coaches. This is just coaching.
No.
Right. And so we actually, leadership and coaching. And we actually just started a new community for coaches where it's around the art of coaching, culture, standards called TOC Coach. You can check it out. I'll drop a link here in the show description. And in that community, I'm just pulling up the post, a really powerful message around standards was just shared. And I want to pull it up because I think it's really, really interesting. And I would ask you, Edward, after I share this, what maybe was one of your audacious or shocking standards? Because I think that every great teacher, remember we're using teacher instead of coach, but whatever, great leader, has a shocking standard that's memorable. JP Nurbin, my partner and TOC coach, is author of a number of books like The Culture System. He shares this. He says, every great culture has a shocking standard. A simple act that communicates something profound about the team's values. The legendary All Blacks of New Zealand are known for theirs. It's called sweeping the sheds. Players, and especially the captains, stay behind after every practice to clean the locker room. This isn't about cleanliness. It's about the legendary standard that reflects a culture of humility and responsibility. And he goes on to give other examples from the USA women's national team, so on and so forth. And then all these coaches started to share their shocking standard. Like one coach says, I, as the head coach, will always sweep the floor before practice. Yeah, it's a shocking standard that we have. You know, I think what you shared right there are shocking standards. The courageous one, that's a shocking standard, right? Like miss courageously. That's rare. It's shocking. So like my challenge to all the coaches listening, what's your shocking standard that clearly communicates that you value player growth and development over wins and losses? That, using my language, is a sign of a savvy coach, or using Edward's language would be the sign of a teacher coach, or whatever it is, right? Like that is a savvy coach. That's the difference. Do you have a shocking standard that prioritizes growth over wins? You're a savvy coach. One shocking standard that I saw in, actually TJ Rosin, our mutual friend TJ Rosin's program, I don't know if he still does this, but before players left, they would all give each other a hug at the end of practice. So these are college men, right? That are expressing affection through hugging each other at the end of practice. It wasn't like dapping up. It wasn't like bro hug. It was like hug. And many of them, and this wasn't required, but many of them said, I love you to each other. And that was a shocking standard. Like when I observed that, I was shocked. And like to this day, both TJ and Graham, who you know, his assistant coach, when I get off the phone with them, and it's rare for men to say, they say, I love you. It's a standard that they've just become accustomed to. It's a shocking one, but it shows a deep care and a commitment to like a transformational relationship and not just a transactional one. So I'd say that's one that has stuck with me. And here's the thing. It's so hard because it's so rare. You know what I mean? It's so hard. Yeah. It's so rare.
It really
like,
is.
Yeah. Right. Like, you know, I recently got I'll give you a celebration here first, actually, Edward. So I would say a shocking standard that I've observed in your gyms or your classrooms or your learning environments is what you've already articulated, which is honesty or telling the truth. You are so honest that I remember the first time I encountered your honesty with a group of athletes, I was shocked. I was like, whoa. He was very direct with these high school athletes. It was a shocking amount of honesty. But over the course of a very short period of time, 5 days of you being honest, what that led to was incredible connection and trust. Because most of those athletes were not used to that shocking level of honesty from their coaches. Because their coaches, their teammates, their parents, whatever, they all wanted something from them. And so they were afraid to offend them with that level of honesty. Whereas like you establish a standard of just like shocking level of honesty, but it comes from a place of, you don't want anything from them. You just want them to get to where they want to go. So I would say that's what I've observed in you.
Yeah. And please remember what you're about to ask, but I think honesty without the ability to help is just mean. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know how many coaches feel that way. So one, you got to have the courage to be honest in the relationship that can sustain that kind of honesty. But you also then have to when you're honest, what you're describing is their pain or their illness. You can't do that if you don't have the medicine.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of coaches, if they even do have the courage to do it, don't have the medicine, the cure, or to make them feel better, right? After the honesty is surfaced. And coaches, I tell you, that's where you guys have to continue to educate yourselves, because there's no better compliment you can give a player than honesty and a standard. because it shows you think they can meet it. You know, we as coaches keep watering down everything and expecting great results. And it's just so disrespectful to the players. They're capable of more, but they're not capable of all of it right away. But they are capable of layering things and developing and growing if we have a plan, if we're educated as coaches, and if we care. I would ask you as a coach this, and you just need to answer this to yourself. Like, what are the signs of your extreme care for your kids? Extreme. Not stuff that is just part of your job description. Like, what is your examples of extreme care?
Yeah.
Like, that benefits them. Not like, oh, I'm here for you. That's saying that. I'm not saying you aren't either. I'm just saying, what are examples of extreme care? So when Tyler and I have basketball conversations that are offline, when we learn from other people, when we are up reading a book late at night, we're not reading that book to make me better. And yeah, I am making me better, but I'm doing it to make someone else better. When I ask someone to poke a hole in my drill or my curriculum, I'm doing it to make someone else better. That's a sign of my care for someone's name I don't even know yet. Mm-hmm. Like, if it's not a labor of love for you guys, you just won't be successful. And forget wins or losses. You just won't be successful with your players, your impact.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. And, you know, I think you talked about making yourself better. And I think a lot of coaches are like, okay, I need to invest in myself. I need to go to a coaching clinic, which we touched on before. I'm going to circle back to now. And, you know, we're talking about what's wrong with coaches. I would say coaching clinics are what's wrong with coaches. And here's why. There's some exceptions. Most of what you learn at a coaching clinic is built to break. I'm gonna say that again. Most of what you will learn at a coaching clinic is built to break. It's like a recent piece of technology. It's like your iPhone. Your iPhone's built to break in 2 years when that contract's up. It's built to break. And guess what? When it breaks, you don't know how to fix it. All you're given is this operating system that's built to break, and you don't have the tools to fix it when it breaks. So guess where you got to go? Back to Apple to buy another phone. And that's nearly every presentation at a coaching clinic. It's just built to break. Oh, here's this new offense. Here's new defense. Here's this baseline out of bounds. But the moment it breaks, the moment the opponent scouts it, the moment they guard another way, you don't know why it worked in the first place. You don't know how to adjust it to your personnel. You didn't do the work to build it. All you did was got the package and you unwrapped it. And so when it breaks, you can't fix it and you're hustling. So you didn't actually develop as a coach at all. All you did was buy another iPhone every time you go to a coaching clinic. And that's what's wrong with coaching clinics.
Yeah, and you just stay dependent. And you just stay dependent on it.
Yeah.
With no, like, right? So perfect example, Tyler. So that's, but first of all, brilliant analogy and 1,000% spot on. I'm doing a coaching clinic in Oregon here in 2 weeks. Is the State High School Coach Association. And I'm on the phone with the guy that's, you know, running it and getting all the speakers. And I was like, you know, what do you want me to speak on? What can I speak on? What do you need? What do you want? And he says, well, let me see. And he goes, well, pretty much every coach is speaking on offensive systems and offensive plays and systems. So if you don't do a system, that'd be great. I was like, well, don't worry. But that's exactly it. Exactly your point. Like, they're all like, and every coach, you know, all 200 coaches are going to be scribbling it all down and figuring out how to make it work with their personnel. But like to your point, when that system they learn in theory breaks, they're in trouble. I watched players, you know, people used to do cross training. I don't know how much of that's done anymore, but they, you know, they want to play football, but they go do this sport. I'm trying to do some cross training in my learning. I get so basketball-y, as I'm sure you know you do, right, Tyler? I know you do a lot of stuff with pickleball, so I think that probably has helped you as a basketball teacher. Yeah, I spend a lot of time watching football coaches and just picking up things. And one of the coaches I try to watch a lot of, because A, he's humorous, but also very funny and can communicate and articulate well, is John Gruden. And he was talking about like a receiver and a quarterback's interaction, and he was like, but if that's not what the defense is telling you, why are you running a chalkboard route? Like, stop running chalkboard routes. And that's what coaching clinics can produce for coaches is, well, X goes here and the ball does this, and then we do this, and this is how it works. It's like, that is not back to the teacher, right? We're coming right back to the beginning of this conversation. You've skipped so many steps along the way for that to work. You've skipped so many steps. And you'll break. And then you go back to the next one. And it's like, coaches have not taken a step back and go, like, coach, let me ask you this. Coaches, think about this. Think of any appliance you have in your house or any, like, anything you have in your house. Like, do you have 16 vacuums? Well, why would you keep all 15 other ones if one worked?
Yeah.
Like, you don't have these just huge quantities of other things except for plays.
Yeah. If you got 16 vacuums, they all suck.
Coach of the day, I said, give me the reason you would not just run formations and actions. Like, here's four or five different formations. Here's four or five different actions we can run. We can disguise it so it's, you know, 25 plays, whatever it is, quote unquote. But we just get action to action. We can go dummy action, real action. We can do, you can still get very creative with that relative to personnel, but it's sustainable. Everyone has a role and a responsibility. So give me why you would not run actions and formations instead of plays. And the first place they went was player IQ. And I'm like, well, if they don't have the IQ to run that, they don't have the IQ to run your 16 or 19 plays that are all varying and different and have more responsibilities than this. You don't have kids that can hold gravity, but you have kids that can set a back screen and then flare up and then kick it to the third side.
I mean,
it doesn't even, it's counter, they counter themselves.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here is the reason and the solution. The reason why coaches don't do that is because it's painful and messy and takes longer to teach. We've been teaching our group how to play offense, four offense against two defense for two months. In order to how to reshape the floor, turn down small advantage for bigger advantages, two outs, don't drive a drive, when to burn cut to the rim, like all of these concepts, 2 months. Are we getting better at these concepts? Yes. Have we mastered these concepts? Never, right? But this, it takes a long time. Whereas you can get a shot or you can get a cut that you want by giving them a play, but it's built to break. Like, that's the difference. You know, like, yep. If you have 10 items, so I just ChatGPT'd this, everybody. You've got 10 items, five actions and five formations. Do you know how many permutations, unique permutations that generates? It might be the next number on your next shirt of five actions and five formations. 3,628,000. Five actions and five formations, right? You mix and match those things. That's 10 factorial is what it is. So, I mean, like, that's a new
number. Give me that number again. What did you come up with? What's that number?
3,628,800. I'm gonna paste this in a text to you. 10 total items.
Yeah.
Five actions and five formations. Wow. Right? So it's like, so why? So, I mean, that answers the question that you asked of that coach, right? So that's A, I think, you know, why coaches don't do that is, and then I think two, what's the solution? What's the fix? Is you have to learn to teach. And I do keep coming back because we both believe this. I know it's what you do on your mission with developing coaches. I know it's what we do at Savvy on our mission to developing coaches. So let me just let you guys behind the curtain. 90% of our customers at Savvy, the coaches that pay us money for access, they come for the systems. They come for lock left, race and space, drive and space, everything that we're preaching against. They come for the systems. That's how we get them in the door, because that's the majority of coaches. But the moment they get in the door, they recognize that we kind of tricked them. We kind of tricked them, because our systems are not like the system they think they bought. For example, first question I got, new coach joined. They're diving into lock left. they DM me after going through the first module of our Lock Left course. Like, so is Lock Left a man-to-man or a zone defense? And I said, you tell me, because it's not a system. If it was a system, it would be a man-to-man or a zone defense. It's not. It's a series of principles and a process by which you can teach conceptual defense. Make it whatever you want. We're teaching you how to teach. We're not teaching you a system. And it really, like, it breaks people's minds early on because they just want the answer, right? But the answer is teach better. That's it.
Teach better. That's the answer. And coaches, think of it like this. Choose your pain. You want the, like, all you're doing by running plays early and doing all that is delaying. It's like a nerve block. You're just delaying the pain that's going to come at the end of the year that you're going to excuse off to refs or, you know, an away gym or a more aggressive team, or you couldn't shoot it that night, but you did it to yourself versus the pain early. I mean, I'm talking to parents and players here right now that are like, literally want to talk about a fall league game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, who cares? Like, are they trying to do the right things in a fall league game? That's the win. Like, who cares? They won or lost. Who cares? They missed their shots. Were they taking the right shots? Like, what's the conversation about? So coaches, like, just choose your pain. But coaches don't choose the pain, Tyler, because what they talk about in the first practice, they're still talking about in the last practice. Yeah. And shout out to my guy, Jason Hardy, with us Core Sessions. He says this all the time to coaches. It's so smart. Like, have new problems. If you don't have new problems, you're not developing. You're not, like, nothing, like, have, and coaches have the same problems every year.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I'm going to, and it comes from a desire to help. I'm going to pitch Savvy Basketball right now. And then Edward, I welcome you to pitch what you do. Savvy Basketball, our membership, is built to help you solve your new problems. If you aren't going to have new problems, you don't need a membership. You just need a DVD or a video course or a booklet or something, right? But, like, if you are the type of coach that we want to work with and you're creating new problems, you need new help all the time. And that's why we have our membership. So, like, if you want help solving your new problems, if you want to generate new problems, come join us at Savvy Basketball. The link will be in the description below. I invite you to, we've got a 7-day free trial on right now. Dive in, ask us all your questions. We'll help solve some problems. And I just think you'll stay, because you'll continue to create new problems. Edward, I know you have the same approach. Do you want to share a little bit about what you do for coaches, or what if they want your help, how they could get it?
Yeah, absolutely. So Tyler will have this to put up, but we're actually launching a school as well. And for everyone listening, I don't think I know Tyler's school well. I don't think our schools are mutually exclusive. I think they both can serve you guys. A time where we're actually teaching you through the whiteboard as a coach. We're going to have a drill book, a vocabulary, and we're also going to have some what we call office hours, to where we're in there talking with you guys, helping you break down film, answer questions. And we're also going to have a look behind the curtain, to where myself and Jason are having cameras in our gym with our players watching us go through a workout that's not scripted, it's just raw footage. So you can see how we handle conflict. We handle things going wrong. We handle a player that can't learn. We handle how somebody in a group can really do something and someone not. How do we handle that varying of skill set or ability? So we'll have all those things on there, only for the purpose of helping you guys become the best coach you're capable of becoming, to have the impact you're capable of having.
Yeah. Coaches need more help, more people doing what you're doing. So I highly encourage you guys to check it out. We call this podcast The Hours, because to actually grow, you have to spend hours with someone. You have to spend hours on your craft. It's not just like a quick fix. And so thanks for spending some of your hours with us. Shout out to all the loyal listeners. Please continue to share it with other coaches. You know, both Edward and I are on a mission to revolutionize the way the game is taught and played. And that's why we do this. So help join us, share it, and invite people into any of the things that we're doing or you're doing. Final thoughts, Edward, before we sign off?
I hope coaches take all this that we talked about in the spirit that it's been in, is to help you and to kind of break out of the matrix that we all have naturally got into, that I think Tyler and I both felt we were getting into when we started the same way. And we just said, we're not going to stay on this road the whole way. It's not enjoyable. It's not helpful. I think your enjoyment of the game is waiting for you on the other side of what we're talking about.
Exactly. All right. Take the red pill, break out the matrix. Your best years are yet to come. And thanks, Edward, for spending hours with us. Until next time, stay savvy, everybody.